This video is brought to you by one of my day jobs, which is that I work at a company called Complexly. Complexly is a company that I co-founded with my brother. We make a bunch of different shows like SciShow and Crash Course and Eons and Bizarre Beasts. It's all over YouTube, and the goal is to have like a team of people who work really hard to make sure that there's good information that people want to get, so they're not stuck with the bad information that happens to be on the platforms where people are. Complexly is a bunch of people, and our budget is quite a diverse pie. But the biggest piece of that pie is audience support. People who buy the Crash Course coin, or their Patreon patrons, or they get the SciShow postcard. This is a really big part of how Complexly is able to do its work. And right now is the Learnathon, the Complexly-wide fundraiser, so that we have money that isn't confined to a show. We can spend it on new projects. We can put it where it's most needed. We can use it to try and do interesting and exciting things that I can't tell you about. I'm sorry. But if you want to check it out, complexlylearnathon.com. There's a link in the description, because that stuff just does not work without audience support. Okay, now to the video. I saw some folks on the internet saying that the people who robbed the Louvre were idiots. And I also saw people saying that the people in charge of the museum security were idiots. And I was like, what a surprise. People on the internet have opinions. But I did kind of want to figure out what I actually thought about it, because ultimately, you know, I hope everybody has a good time. That's the take I really believe in. I just hope everybody has a good time with the heists. Nobody got hurt. You know, a little bit of French history may have been lost, but we lose history. That happens. But as I looked more and more into it, I started to think maybe the criminals were kind of geniuses here. Like, they did all kinds of things that I would not have expected. I imagine a heist as like a black clothes under the cover of night, rappelling from skylights, blow darting security guards, splinter cell type situation. And this was the exact opposite. It was timed for there to be people in the building so that security would have a first priority beyond the jewels. They pulled up in a ladder truck wearing high visibility outfits, because sometimes visible is more invisible. And they also, I hadn't thought about this, they went after items that had intrinsic value. Like the Mona Lisa, obviously priceless. But if you cut it into a bunch of little pieces until it's unrecognizable, that's trash. Jewels and metals can be cut down and melted, resulting in objects that are obviously far less valuable than they would be in their original form, but still might be worth tens of millions of dollars. And then I started thinking, like, maybe these high-value targets were kept in a very distant part of the museum, far away from the entrance, so that they wouldn't be easy to, like, grab and run away with. Maybe that resulted in security being a little lax about it. Maybe they hadn't even considered somebody coming in through the wall. Maybe the doofs and the Paris police didn't understand the security vulnerability they had, and the criminals found, like, a kind of unpatched exploit. Turns out I was wrong about all of that, because you know what I did? I thought, I have no idea how any of this works, but I do know somebody who does. Sherry Davidoff is a friend of mine. Weirdly, we live in the same Montana town, but she is also a security expert, the head of LMG Security, and the subject of the book Breaking and Entering, The Extraordinary Story of a Hacker Called Alien. And like, being the subject of a book is so much more cool than like writing a book. Until that book came out, Alien was well known in some circles, but no one knew that Sherry and Alien were the same person, which I find very cool. So I texted her and I asked if she had Louvre thoughts, and she said, yes, she certainly did. And so I had a conversation with her. And during that conversation, I discovered that there was an unpatched exploit, but it was not at all the one I thought it would be. More than that, though, there was a network of trade-offs completely out of my view that both criminals and security experts are well aware of. And the biggest mistake security made might have been something I heard no one talk about at all, the leak of a security audit.
So hacking back at MIT started off as something you like physically went and did. There was a midnight coffee house club. We all met at the coffee house and we would go essentially find places to break into. And this card is actually really useful for carding a door open, but I had to dig it up because I remembered the very first method of entry is knock first.
Absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, I feel like that relates to what's happening at the Louvre, because literally these guys are out there with like high visibility vests and hard hats. And they're like, la, 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 we're going to drive up to the building. They're not like dressed in black with ski masks going in the dark of night, because that looks really suspicious.
I started to think to myself, like, what was genius about what happened here? Like, what was a failure on the part of security? And what was genius on the part of the thieves? And I kept having ideas. And then I kept thinking to myself, I know nothing about this, but I know someone who does. So one of the things that you do or have done in your job is actually testing the physical safety of a space by breaking into it, not with permission, like no one knows you're about to do it, but you have been given the task of test our security, don't tell us how you're going to do it, just get us. So you've done this a lot. And I, wildly enough, you live in my town. I know you. We're friends. We're not in the same, we could have recorded this in the same room, but it's actually easier just to do it online.
That's harder.
I could walk to your office right now. So I wanted to test out some of my thinking on you so you could tell me how I'm thinking about things wrong. And also I wanted to sort of ask you this first question, which is why do I love this so much?
Oh, because it's exciting. It's so fun to steal things. Hank, you should try it sometime. Yeah, like the first time. And by the way, these days, I do only steal things with permission.
Yeah.
And these days, when I break into things, they're mostly digital.
Yeah.
Or we also do on-site social engineering. We have actually broken into some really famous buildings here at LMG. I mean, not here at LMG, but our team has around the country.
Yeah.
But primarily through social engineering, because, you know, for exactly that reason, it's easier to break in when things are open and when people are walking around and it looks less suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
I did start off as a physical penetration tester, though, and that sounds dirty, but it isn't. It is where you physically break into buildings and write reports about it, which is half really interesting and half, you know, a boring report writing job.
Is it not terrifying?
No, it's not.
I would be so scared.
I mean, I guess it could be for some people, but I find it fun.
Okay.
First of all, you always have a limited amount of time. So it's really different than being a real robber. I think that's the part that's nerve-wracking because I'm like, all right, I have like 8 hours in this city where I can stake this place out and make my plan. And the more I did it, the more I realized I could spend more and more time on reconnaissance because if I do a good job, breaking in and getting out has to be fast.
Yeah.
And there were times where I'd break in and get out and I'd be like, wow, it's 9:05. I have the whole rest of the day. And they picked my favorite time. Like when people go in is like the best time, in my opinion, to rob a place that people go into and out of.
I once tried to get to tailgate at Google headquarters just because I didn't have a way to get into a place where there was a phone charger entirely without any interest in industrial espionage. But I was just like, I look like a Google employee, right? And I tried to tailgate this person and they immediately got me.
Ooh.
I just needed to charge my phone. I need to get an Uber and I didn't know how to get home otherwise.
See, you could have been getting paid for that if you were in my industry.
Yeah, I'm sure that they do lots of that, which is why they're so good at stopping. Tailgating is when you like don't have a badge and you just sort of walk in after someone. I saw a TikTok that was like, you know, whatever's going on at the Louvre right now, I wish everyone the best. I hope that the criminals have a good time. I hope that the police have a good time.
Oh, how nice.
This is kind of how I feel about it. The French government and police are not feeling that way about this. So let's start with what went right here for the criminals. Like, what were they smart about?
Okay, well, they were smart about the speed.
Gotcha.
I'd say that's number one. And that is the number one lesson I've learned in my life as a penetration tester is you got to be in and out. So I think that was really smart. And they also capitalized on inherent weaknesses that I'm sure the Louvre team themselves had wrestled with.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that the Louvre was not impenetrable.
Sure.
They knew that it had security weaknesses, and they were balancing that with the need for traffic to go down that road in front
mm-hmm.
and the need for the Louvre to be beautiful and accessible to people as well.
And safe, like, too. I always think about security door or like fire doors where you're like, oh, my God, I got to put a door legally every certain number of feet. And like, what does that do to security?
Yeah. But I keep hearing over and over that the Louvre wasn't built for security. And that actually has made me laugh because the Louvre was built for security.
Sure, it was a palace.
Yeah, it was a defensive fortress. It was just built for security in 1190. So it's a little bitty bit dated.
Yeah.
And there's actually a whole exhibit about the Louvre's original structure. And that actually gives you, I mean, I would be shocked if the criminals didn't go through that exhibit taking notes about, you know, just the whole structure of the Louvre.
How do you know whether or not you can buzzsaw through the side of a building? That seems a little tricky to me. It's probably an old defensive fortress. So they went in by cutting through the building, right?
But they did it very quickly. I mean, my guess is we do know two of the criminals were apprehended. My expectation is we will learn more about their backgrounds.
Yeah.
But the fact that their DNA was on file somewhere suggests to me that they may be experienced criminals. Perhaps they have a track record. Perhaps they've tried these things before.
Mm.
Certainly, if I were the criminals, I would test it out on something first.
You just build a wall and start cutting through it. I mean, this movie's going to be so good, Sherry. I'm going to love this movie.
I feel like like jewel heists maybe have been done. I don't know.
Oh, but like there's always another way to do it. Another question I have, what I hadn't considered is the target. So you think about stealing the Mona Lisa.
Mm.
This is a terrible idea.
How are you going to make money?
What good is the Mona Lisa? How do you sell that to someone? It's only like good as like collateral for some international crime boss, you know?
Yeah.
It's only bragging rights. I recognize that the crown jewels of Napoleon's wife or whatever it is that got stolen are more valuable in situ. Like they're more valuable with the provenance, with like the story of what they are. But like you can melt down that stuff and it's worth money. You can cut gems into other sizes and they're worth money. Do you think that the people who do this, they think about the difference between the kinds of things they have to protect? Like if there is something that on its own could be worth tens of millions of dollars, even for parts, regardless of its historical background, do they think about that differently? And do they like keep it in parts of the museum that are less accessible?
That's exactly the question I think that a lot of experts have been asking. Or is that really the gallery you want to keep the crown jewels in? Yes, it's valuable, but we know it's less protected. In fact, in 1976, there was already a theft from the same gallery in a very similar way because it's right out there on the street and it's not like in some interior part of the building. So I think that's a really good point. If you were the criminal, what would you steal? You probably wouldn't go for the awesome, but not as valuable on the black market, pottery. The Mona Lisa might be, maybe you could sell that to like Vladimir Putin or somebody. I don't know.
I'm not selling anything to Vladimir Putin because I value my life.
Good. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I'm glad we have this on record. Yeah. But yeah, they're going to cut down those jewels. They may already have started the process of melting things down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to my colleague, Divya Olav, who, by the way, has written 3 books on lockpicking. He's amazing. And he was wondering if, this will start a trend of like microscopic etching into jewels so that they're easier to identify.
Yeah.
He was like, I wonder if they've already been etched. Probably not. So I think we're going to see some security trends coming out of this, as we have seen in past events as well.
This also happened, I think, to some people's surprise, while the museum was open. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, what a great exploit, because now you have a bunch of stuff that matters a lot that isn't the jewels, which are the people, the tourists, the people walking around. And so security has a first priority that is not the thing that you want.
Yeah. And the first thing they did was they closed that gallery. And the idea was the thieves can't escape that way. And it keeps the people safe. But it also makes it harder for security to come in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that tug of war.
Yeah. But they also could escape because there was a hole in the building.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the problem. Yes, they made a hole.
I just think about like the time it takes to get down the truck, because those things don't move fast.
That was amazing.
Those lifts.
Did you see the video?
Oh, no. There's a video of it like going down.
Oh yeah, and they're like, it's like that scene in the Blues Brothers where they run and then they get in the elevator and it's like dun, 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 dun.
Just listening to the girl from Ipanema. All of this to me is adding up to some smart things going on here. Number one, get stuff that like the value isn't contingent upon it being in the current shape or form that it is in.
Yes, 100%.
Two, do it during daylight hours so that there's like a screen. You've got security worrying more about the people, which I think is, the correct thing. Very 2025, probably maybe in 1950 or 1920, screw the tourists, start shooting immediately. But nowadays we value the lives of the people maybe more than we once did. So when I was talking to you about this, I was like, man, they must have thought these jewels are so far from any entrance or exit, there's no way for you to get them. And you were like, no. They knew about this vulnerability.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've had multiple security audits, in fact, since the new director came on board in 2021. So not only have they known their issues, they actually made an announcement that the Louvre would be going through security overhauls.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I wonder if that triggered the criminals to act now. Like, oh, okay, we know there's security issues. We know they're not implemented yet, or that the solutions aren't implemented.
Yeah.
Let's act now and strike before there's new security, right? I mean, wouldn't you do that if you were the criminal with our bad guy hats on here?
Yes, I got to put my bad guy hat on. Absolutely, I would do the jewel thief. I think that I'd be the kind of criminal who would do things very quietly and make sure I felt safe the whole time until getting caught and then suddenly being in trouble.
I've seen you get up on stage, and I bet that was very scary for you to talk about cancer for the first time.
Yeah, I think that's totally the same.
You like to push yourself. Push yourself.
Oh, all right. I'll imagine myself holding a concrete saw and threatening a security guard
yes.
with it.
Yes.
Am I missing anything else in terms of what was smart here? And like what maybe like what has changed in the last 20 or 30 years that the security audits didn't pick up on or anything like that?
Oh, I mean, there's so much. One thing to note also, though, is that the criminals were not equal in their skills. And in fact, eyewitness reports say one of the criminals cut very easily into one of the boxes with the jewels in it. Mm. And the other one kind of like hacked away at it. And then one of the criminals, you know, leaped into the getaway box thing that went down the ladder. And the other one just kind of dove really fast. There's push and pull that the Louvre staff, they had to make some important decisions. Because on the one hand, they could have made it even harder for criminals to break into those boxes. But they also wanted to make sure that firefighters could smash them in the event of a fire and take out the jewels. And we have that challenge with security all the time. You mentioned fire doors and safety.
Wow.
And there's always a push and pull between safety measures and security, keeping people out and letting them out.
Because one thing that somebody who runs a library or a museum or anywhere where important stuff is, you're much more likely to lose stuff to a fire or some other sort of destructive thing than you are to lose it to theft.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to plan for all of those disasters, not just one kind.
I assume that the Louvre security folk know about a lot of different potential vulnerabilities they have, and they have to weigh those vulnerabilities. How are they going to deal with those individual things? Do you think that this ranked fairly high on their list of worries?
I mean, that's an interesting question. You know, they have invested a lot in security staff who are mostly focused on the central entrance. And I had the opportunity to be there in May of this year and saw that, you know, they did a pretty good job.
Wow, I immediately suspect you're involved.
No, not involved. Yeah, I mean, watching how they corralled large masses of people is actually really helpful for understanding where they were investing their resources, because I'm sure their security staff are probably trained to deal with the homeless, to deal with people who are drunk, to deal with people who are trying to touch the statues or graffiti something. You know, there's the pop and crackle and all the everyday lower security issues. But something of this magnitude doesn't happen nearly as often. And so they're not investing as much in dealing with the trained crew that comes up in a bucket truck from outside. We're always evaluating risk. And risk is a factor that involves likelihood of something happening and the potential impact if it happens. So this was higher impact, low likelihood. And they see a lot of low impact, high likelihood things all the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You mostly think about penetration, but less about sort of like what you do once the heist is done, I imagine. Like, how much planning goes into what happens after?
I have a surprise for you. I'm also a certified forensic investigator.
Okay.
And have spent a lot of time, at least on the network side, analyzing how you respond and what happens next. That certainly applies here. Number one, I thought a lot about the fact that things have changed so much in the past decade. The fact that they got a helmet and a vest and they extracted strands of hair and they got the DNA and they were able to look in a database and find two of the criminals.
Yeah.
They didn't have to trace the path. They didn't have to find, you know, a license plate or whatever. They were literally able to say, we're going to identify this person.
Yeah.
And then find where the person with that identity is before they leave the country. So I think that's going to have some ripple effects as to how criminals behave in the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see criminals focusing more on getting away even more quickly because they did have time. They could have left the country in the time that they had.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they just didn't feel like they needed to.
But do you think that the first step is to start disassembling the gems and stuff?
Again, let's put our bad guy hats on. You probably want to make those stolen items as untraceable as possible as quickly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is they're already thinking, and they probably planned ahead, how are they going to cut those gems? How are they going to melt down, you know, whatever metals they can so that they're not recognizable? Because the last thing you want is to be flying to a non-extradition country with like a crown in your suitcase.
I think probably security would catch the crown.
I just wear that for fun.
It's pure gold, though.
I'm going to mail it FedEx to my friend, Vladimir Putin.
I mean, another interesting exploit is like scooters in Paris.
Yes.
You know, everything's got cameras all over it now, but you can go a lot faster on a scooter than you can go on anything else. Very hard to chase someone, and then also very easy to switch from one vehicle to another or, you know, go to some blind spot.
I was shocked when the CEO of that health insurance company was murdered in New York City, that it took as long as it did to track down the attacker because of the network of cameras that we have.
Yeah.
I am sure there have been a lot of postmortem meetings about that. But you're right, the scooter can go really fast. And certainly if it's possible for a man to escape on foot, I would imagine it's possible for a scooter to escape as well. And, you know, at some point, your criminal is going to ditch it. But can we talk about vehicles more? Because I think that's maybe the most interesting piece of this.
Oh, okay. Hit me with vehicle stuff.
Okay. So when I was talking to Deviant, he mentioned the Oklahoma City bombing when Timothy McVeigh drove a vehicle up to a federal building in Oklahoma City and blew it up. He pointed out that since that time, you know, if you go to a federal building now, what do you see? Barriers, barricades.
Yeah.
You can't drive a truck up to a federal building. It just created this whole new process where if there's a federal building, they have now installed barricades. And so I agree with him. I think we're going to start to see major landmarks, including museums, looking at doing that because if it's possible, you know, again, it's hard. It's on a really big street. But the fact that they were able to drive a vehicle up to the museum, especially with their a freaking ladder, a bucket truck all the way up. And I'm actually a little bit shocked that there weren't more concerns about that, that that was not immediately causing some kind of warning. Because you want to make sure any vehicle in an environment like that is clearly identifiable. It's not just like dudes in hard hats, cool, we're all good. You know, it should have been a very visible permit. And ideally, you want to have that gated off and somebody has to, you know, let them in if they genuinely have to do work. So I think we've already seen that happening at federal buildings in the U.S. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see that at major museums as well.
I mean, do you think of these things kind of in the same context, like physical penetration versus, you know, like what is traditionally now thought of as hacking, where it's all about access to computer systems often and usually remotely. Do you think of this as like, you know, Timothy McVeigh kind of found a zero day exploit? All you got to do is buy a bunch of fertilizer. That's available. All you got to do is drive up to the side of the building. That's nobody's thought that somebody might do this yet. And then once that exploit is known, you start to see the patches roll out with new barriers, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. In cybersecurity, we would call that TTPs. So that's the attacker's tactics. And often we see a new tactic getting tried out and attackers will start to use that once they see that it's effective. So all of a sudden they're calling you as an IT scammer and hey, that worked. They're going to call you again and again and again. And all of a sudden you see a rash of those. So don't be surprised if we see another bucket truck incident. You know, if it worked once, maybe it'll work again. And attackers are going to copy that. They're not afraid to steal ideas.
I think about this with 9/11 all the time where it was like, wow, that was just there. Box cutters and everybody thought that a hijacked plane meant they were going to ransom off the plane, not that the plane would become a weapon.
Yeah. You know, I find 9/11 interesting as well. I don't know if you know this, but my first job out of high school was working for the Bank of New York. And so, and I grew up in New Jersey. So I would take the PATH train into the World Trade Center. I would come up and then I would walk like a block to my office on Barclay Street. And every morning I would pass these security guards at the World Trade Center. And they were guarding the garage. I don't know if you remember why they were guarding the garage. Yeah, because I was just talking to a colleague of mine who didn't. She's 27, I think. But back in around 93, the World Trade Center was bombed, or they tried to bomb it. Someone drove a vehicle in and tried to set off a bomb. And so now, or then, they had guards to prevent the underground bombing. And so we're always kind of responding to the last threat, unfortunately. That was a big concern at the time. That's very similar to what happened in Oklahoma City as well. So there was that rash of, you know, vehicle related issues that we now know how to protect against.
What are the things that you think might come out of this heist in terms of adapting to the tactics that we're learning about right now?
Well, I think number one, we're going to see other museums starting to look at their infrastructure.
I don't know why that happened.
Did you just see that?
Yeah, I just had balloons come up and I don't know why. I don't know how to turn it off.
Oh my God, I got fireworks about that. The AI he's right.
Are you filming this on your Mac camera?
Yeah.
I'm filming it through the Mac operating system and it does that. Yeah.
It's like, you, what's
if you
happening?
Do certain hand gestures, I don't know what they are.
Happy birthday to us. Well, number one, I think we're going to start to see museums really thinking about vehicle-based attacks. And to be honest, I'm surprised they hadn't already been. Again, there is a difference between the U.S. and Europe, and culture, and of course our experiences. But the Louvre was built as a fortress.
Yeah.
And we just need to be thinking about, you don't need to be obsessed with security. I think the New York Times, someone in the New York Times said it wasn't built with an obsession for security. Actually, it was.
Yeah.
But there are some basics we need to think about. And so an easy one is just keeping vehicles, especially those that can reach higher floors, yeah, away from the side of the building, away from the perimeter of that building, putting up some physical barriers, and then tracking and making it really obvious if there's an unauthorized building or an unauthorized vehicle there, if that makes sense.
Do you think that they may have come by before to test and see whether or not people would question them?
Oh, that's interesting. So you're wondering if they showed up in construction outfits to question?
No, if they like several times, or like once before, they did like a test where they pulled their little bucket truck up next to the building and didn't do anything, just to see if anyone, because it seems to me, if I saw a bucket truck and somebody doing construction or like even putting a saw on the outside of the Louvre, I'd be like, there they go again. They're doing construction on a building, because that's what happens in cities. If I worked for the Louvre, I probably would even say, oh, you know, I didn't hear about the construction that they're doing. Somebody's authorizing someone somewhere. If I was security at the Louvre, I would assume then that I would know whether or not there was going to be construction on that wing of the building.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the security teams themselves have said there was so much happening. In fact, I think it was the labor union that said there was so much construction happening in that area. It was on a regular basis very difficult for security to tell what vehicles were authorized, what people were authorized, and what weren't. So I think that was a common problem.
Maybe one of the like cleverest things is looking at seeing how often this is going on and how normal will it look?
Absolutely. And honestly, there are a lot of similarities between network penetration testing and physical penetration testing, because if you have the time to put into reconnaissance, you can really plan a very effective attack strategy. And just being there for a few days, I could see, we were actually staying very close to the Louvre. I could see how busy it was, how much construction that was going on. There's millions of visitors every year. And I think it was probably overwhelming for any normal human. And security guards are humans, just like everybody else.
Do you think that the thieves had a first thing that they realized when they were like, I think this might be possible?
It'll be interesting to find out their structure. If it's an organized crime group, the people who were on the ground might have just been hired by other people, you know? And maybe they were promised a percentage, like, hey, I know a really good burglar. I know someone with experience in jewel heist. They did this jewelry store and that jewelry store. People who steal things regularly, you know, there are professionals and they may work as contractors for different organized crime groups. That's certainly what we see on the network side of things. So my guess, and I don't know, my guess is that this was probably organized in some way and that the folks who were the boots on the ground may have a percentage. But it might not be, you know, they may not be an isolated group. They may be part of a bigger group.
That's very much not in line with how Ocean's 11 works, you know?
Oh, dear.
It's always these like rogue individuals who just want to do the one last heist versus it being like a Russian mafia would just make me sad.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be Russian. To access some of the resources and knowledge, or maybe it was just very talented and experienced individuals that were like, mm-hmm, cool, let's pull off our one last heist and then go flee the country and live on a beach. You never know.
Yeah.
But in order to move jewels like that, it's probably helpful to have a network and to piece it together. To answer your original question, my guess is they probably visited multiple times, if not many times. There were also some reports that there was a known security issue on that door. And that makes me wonder if they had already done a little testing or already jimmied the door somehow, or at least taken a very close look to understand the materials.
It's so human, you know, like locked in this room, there's billions of dollars and everybody gets to go see and look at it. And so you all like, you're just walking by, you think like, man, like I could get this. But also to do it in a way where like nobody gets hurt, it feels like a story.
Yeah, you sound impressed by the criminals. You really do.
I am impressed by the criminals. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's true. Like, it's a work of art in and of itself to commit an effective heist.
Yeah.
And to get away with it, which some of them didn't quite.
Doesn't seem like they all have. And indeed, if they get two of them, you know, maybe they will find the others fairly quickly.
Maybe.
Though I don't know. If it's a mafia thing, I probably would keep my mouth shut.
Good to know, Hank. Seems like you lean that direction anyway.
I really don't like organized crime. As someone who is bumped up against it very lightly, it is not a vibe.
Gotcha. Okay.
I assume that you've bumped up against organized crime a lot.
Yeah. I mean, organized crime is penetrating networks day in and day out. And so as we're advising our clients, our team is constantly like monitoring what they're doing, trying to track different threat actor groups. We actually have a laboratory here in Missoula, Montana. I don't know if you know this. Mm-hmm. We have a laboratory where we experiment and we run these little sting operations, and we're monitoring the evolution of the tactics and techniques. So I think it's fascinating. They've really, the bad guys in terms of network security, they've really kind of grown up over the years, kind of at the same time that businesses like mine have grown up as well. So we are now professional penetration testers, and they are now professional cyber criminals.
Yeah, I came to visit your office once, and I met a ransom negotiator, and was just very impressed by the fact that there is just a ransom negotiator, and that's a job people have.
We have a chief ransom negotiator.
You have several? How big is your ransom negotiation department?
Well, these days, we decided to get out of emergencies. So we wound down for the most part. We now hand things off to another partner team that we work with. Thank goodness, because it was getting exhausting.
I bet. Yeah, she said, like, the most I've ever done in one day is three. And I was like, I hate that for you. That sounds very stressful.
Ransomware is not going away, but that's a topic for another day.
What do you think the failures were? To what extent was this the low probability exploit, and it was probably known and they probably just missed it? Or do you think, because I think that everybody like wants there to be a big failure. Do you think there was a big failure here?
Well, I mean, I don't look at security as big failures. Everyone is always taking risks. Walking around on the street is taking a risk. And sometimes you pay the price. One big decision they made was putting the jewels in that specific room, the Apollo Gallery, which we know has some weaknesses. But at the same time, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place for the public. There is so much benefit to being in that room. And choosing to put them in the center of the room instead of maybe up against a wall where they might be a little bit more protected. I mean, it feels when you're in that room like they're yours, too. Like you could almost reach out and touch them. And I'm sure that's what the criminals wanted as well. So putting the jewels in that room, which honestly, if I were advising them, I probably would have advised them to think twice, especially given there had already been another theft and they hadn't really made any huge changes. I certainly would have wanted more monitoring in that wing. I think the vehicle security was a big gap, as we've discussed. And I'm sure that's an area where they will invest more. It's a relatively low cost investment compared with like installing a huge camera system and monitoring it regularly. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be more effective than just trying to add guards. You know, I think that vehicle security and making sure you understand who's on site and who's near the building is really critical.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that there's a certain amount of adding guards can be its own vulnerability, because then you have, because humans, you know, you have more potential inside men.
Yeah.
You have more potential confusion. Like if not everybody knows everybody, then that can be confusing. You have a different guy show up one day who's not the guy who was supposed to show up. I've seen the movies.
Yeah. You know, when I started off as a penetration tester, one of the first bank branches I did, I got in the whole back area, you know, was able to get keys and all that stuff. And this is like a little bank branch. So that's actually a harder job in some cases than a big office building. And one of my recommendations, silly me, was consider a security guard. And the bank was like, no way, because you have to pay for a full-time security guard. It's not going to pay for itself. They just use things like dye packs and stuff like that and try to reduce the amount of cash on hand so that there's less for people to get away with, and timed entry into vaults and things like that. So security guards are not always an investment that people are willing to spring for, because the ROI can be lower than you might think.
Do you think that they do security audits like you do, where it's like they actually like hire a team to be like, break into the Louvre? Or like how do they do their audits there?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And it also gets to the distinction between a security audit and a penetration test.
Okay.
I like to do a penetration test with a security audit. So a pen test is where somebody's going to actually try to break into your building. And that way you kind of get that creativity. You see exactly where your weak points are. And I think it's important to try to understand the root cause of any vulnerabilities that are exploited. A security audit is more of a comprehensive, methodical process where you're literally going through door by door or section by section thinking, oh, the hinges are on the wrong side here, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I think the two are important. They serve different purposes. So with a penetration test, you might want to demonstrate risks to upper management so they know what they need to invest in and why they need to invest in that. It can help you prioritize. There isn't a great substitute for that comprehensive security audit, but I would suggest doing it after you've addressed the root causes of a penetration test. From what I can tell, they've done security audits. I haven't seen any mention in the media of a penetration test at all, which did surprise me. The other thing to mention, Hank, is that one of their recent security audit reports was leaked to the media.
Oh.
And to me, that is a huge red flag. That's a huge black eye for them. Anytime a company gets hacked, if I see people talking to the media and leaking reports or leaking information, they have a bigger problem. They might have an employee problem. They might have somebody still in their network. But that in and of itself is a security problem that's going to make the PR just blow up. And I think that's part of what happened.
Well, would that also be a vulnerability if like your audit is out there so everybody knows your weaknesses?
Oh, 100%. You know, the New York Times said that they'd seen a copy.
Wow.
I absolutely would be concerned and be wondering who leaked this to the media, unless it was deliberately leaked for some reason. Yeah. But I don't see any evidence of that. So I think that's a big takeaway.
I think that a penetration test of the Louvre would be very hard, though, because as we saw, that the penetration that happened here was not non-destructive. So like they're not going to hire you to go into the Louvre and then you pull a bucket truck up next to the Apollo Gallery and get your buzzsaw out.
No, that's one of the problems with physical penetration tests is that they never want you to smash anything. And also, we're always limited on time. So, you know, I've definitely at times where I've been like, I would just smash that window and open the door, but I'm not allowed. So I'll have to pick the locks, which takes longer and I'm more likely to be detected. So, yeah, I think that is a challenge with physical penetration testing for sure.
Do you think that big organizations like the Louvre should allow destructive penetration tests?
Oh, Hank, that's a hard question. I don't think they needed to for this. I don't think they need to allow destructive penetration tests to get the bang for their buck. If they come up with a clean pen test report or a clean security audit report, great. Maybe consider taking it to the next level.
They're far away from having from being perfect enough to need that.
Yeah. I mean, from what we've seen, these issues had already been called out, except I don't know about the vehicle one, but a lot of the other issues had already been called out. I am curious to turn the tables for a second. If you were going to rob the Louvre, how would you do it?
You know what I'd do, but I think that I would make sure that about 2,000 of the people in the Louvre are on my team. So when you ask me that, the first thing I think is like, okay, what are the unique skills that I have that a security audit might not have thought of? So like, what zero-day exploit might I have? And what I have is that like, I have a lot of fans.
You have followers. Oh my God.
So could I create like be like, okay, everybody, if you're up for something very weird, come join this Discord. We join the Discord together. I vet these people for how crazy they are. And then we all fly to Paris. We all are different folks. We don't look like we're together. We're all from America, but so are all the other tourists. We all go into the Louvre, and then we time it so that we all get there. We're all in the line at the same time. We time it so that we're all in this room at the same time. And fill up that room so that nobody else can get in. And the people at the Louvre are like, oh my God, the Apollo Gallery is so full. Then smash, and then as a unit, we run out as a big crowd, and everybody's just a guy. I mean, we're panicked, and like maybe, you know, somebody sets off some firecrackers, so they think there's like gunshots going on. That's how I do it.
I love it. I want to hear more about your getaway.
More firecrackers. I don't know.
You should use Telegram on the dark web, but otherwise.
Okay, sorry.
I'm amazed that you have thought this through, Hank.
I hadn't thought it through. That was from scratch.
Well, this is your superpower, though. You do have followers.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, a friend of mine is making a role-playing game, and he was like, what do you want your power to be? And I was like, I want you to invent a new power, swarm. where I can just turn myself into a swarm of thousands of things. And I like that we're on the same wavelength here.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Well, I'm glad you asked. It made me nervous thinking about it.
I want to cut.
And then everybody gets a cut. And we give away all the jewels and then we return the money to the countries from whence they came.
Oh, you're such a robber.
That's the only way I could get them on board. All these people would never do it if it was just for crime.
Someday there will be a dark Hank on the dark web.
How do you know there isn't already?
Ooh.
Sherry.
On that
thank
note.
Thank you so much for spending a little time with me. Because there was a bunch of stuff that I had wrong. Unsurprisingly, because I don't know that much about this stuff.
Thank you for reaching out to your friendly neighborhood security geek.
Yeah. And you can check out LMG Security if you ever need security, because they're the best in the business.
Thanks, Hank.
And here's the situation. I'm going to play Connections now. But you can only watch it if you just click on the Learnathon link in the description. You don't have to donate. But like for me and for you, we've got a pact here. The honest thing is to click on the link and check out what we're doing for the Learnathon. There's a bunch of cool stuff going on. You can find out about it and participate in all the different ways you want to. It doesn't have to cost you any money. But just click on it, look at the website, and then you can come back and watch Connections. That's the deal that we have with each other right now. I've established it and you've agreed. Okay. Have you done it? Let's do Connections. We got Ouija board, backbone platform, seance. That can't be it. Spirit, Scrabble, Medium, Satan. Isn't that like a kind of fake meat? Backbone, Sacrum. These are all chakras. Are they chakras or are they just like parts of the body? Seychelles. Well, what I did notice was Ouija board, computer keyboard, and Scrabble all have letters, and maybe abecedarium. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like it has letters. But I think that the mystical communication with spirit category is a red flag. So like spirit and seance, they like feel connected, but like Ouija board and spirit and seance, they're much more connected than that. Is the Satan, is that also a piece of furniture? I'm like, which one is it that I'm thinking of? Medium, spirit, outlet, courage sounds promising to me. Okay, let's get these together. Courage, heart, backbone, yes, and spirit. You know, a little bit of, you got the ability. That's, yeah, okay, great. Courage was really a door into that, made that one pretty easier. Backbone and spirit, I wouldn't have put together if I hadn't had courage and heart to tie them together. That means that backbone, heart, and sacrum aren't a thing. Sacrum, Seychelles, Satan, seance. What? Is that a thing? That would mean that it was outlet, medium, venue, and platform, which is a category. So it is, in fact, seance, sacrum, Seychelles, and Satan, which is just like it starts with say, but doesn't look like it should, maybe? Like this would be sacrum and this would be chance. What are you going to call this category, Connections? What are you going to call... It's just words starting with a say sound, which is a infuriating that that's the blue. You know, since they introduced purple as like a thing that you get a little extra like badge for, it's much, much more angering for me when I don't get the purple first. Even though I've always said I don't win if I don't get the purple first. But that is, I mean, I guess, I don't know. This was just much easier. This was the first one I got. That's the purple! Things featuring letters A through Z. Great. I don't know what an abecedarium is. An inscription consisting of the letters of the alphabet listed in order for practice exercises. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. I love that we had them a long time ago, though. I guess I'm thinking of like children using these, but that would not have been the case. This would have been for like a scribe in training. This guy sucked. He was bad at his job. Yeah, and then who knows what's next? Probably medium, outlet, venue, and platform. So like a place from which you can speak, I guess. What's that going to say? A channel. Yeah, it's like a way. Okay, great. Well, that's frustrating, but we're okay, everybody. Thank you for your time. I got a perfect puzzle, but I didn't get purple first. And we're just going to be at peace with that.